Welcome to today's episode of the Fort Polk Podcast. Now, riding a motorcycle can be an exciting and liberating experience, but it's important to remember that it also comes with its fair share of risks. In this episode, we'll be covering some essential tips and guidelines to help you stay safe while enjoying the open road. So sit back, relax, and let's ride into the world of motorcycle safety. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you are listening to this podcast. I'm Jeff England from the Fort Polk Public Affairs Office, and we are listening and doing the Fort Polk Podcast. So welcome. Today's guest is a very special guest from the aviation unit over by the airport or the airfield. Chief Warrant Officer 4. Brendan Murphy, how you doing?
Hey, good morning, Jeff. I'm doing all right. And let's just caution you on the use of the word special, because that has different connotations for different people. So,
Well, I've got so many jokes running through my mind. I know none of them will get past my one listener.
No, we're doing great. And I appreciate you having me on to come and talk about it. You know, I'm here, obviously, this morning in the official capacity as the senior Fort Polk motorcycle mentor.
Yeah, we only got a couple days left in May, which is the official Motorcycle Awareness Month.
It is. And as we were just looking this morning, about the early mid-80s, it looks like, is when May officially became Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month. So it's been a lot longer than what I thought it had.
Yeah. And what was it this year? May 1st this year, President Biden actually officially made some declaration about it also.
He did. And I guess when you have the President of the United States, that makes it really official.
Yeah, I miss my motorcycle. So I take it you have an Indian.
I don't yet.
You just want one. You want an Indian.
I do. It's kind of my dream bike.
Oh, yeah?
And you know, I can't tell you. I think they're beautiful bikes. I think they're beautiful in the way they're manufactured, the design of the bike, and then their paint schemes. I love some of their paint schemes. My favorite is the navy blue and kind of a cream off-white kind of cream color.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Our prior chaplain Hammond.
Yeah.
Probably I would say that I'd like
Harley Chaplin.
I know, you know, he's a chaplain. And I know we're not supposed to be envious and idolize other, but oh my goodness, his bike was gorgeous.
You know, Command Sergeant Major Osborne.
Yep.
He's a big bike rider too.
Yep. Yeah. Indian is my dream bike. I don't have one yet. That's probably going to be my retirement gift.
Midlife crisis.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. You know, but, I can't, you know, I have a Suzuki right now. It's a Suzuki V-Strom, DL650. It's kind of a dual sport is what they call it.
Like a Euro.
Yeah. It's a little more beefy than a Euro. It looks more similar to a regular motorcycle, but it's set up kind of like an enduro bike. And it sits higher.
See, I've always liked those because you could like ride down the street and then just decide to go off road.
You can,
and that's. I love that idea.
Yep, and I tell you, I've done that here up in the Kisatchee. I'll get on some of these back roads and I'll be riding through the Kisatchee and be like, oh, let me take this little trail, and I'll get off on it. I don't get off on too many trails right now because I've just got street tires on it. But in Alaska, I had some off-road tires on, and so I did a lot more trail riding in Alaska. But it's also a heavy bike, so it's really a little too heavy for
You don't want to get stuck in the mud with
riding.
That stuff.
Yeah, but it's been a great bike to me. I bought it brand new in 2004, and I've had it the whole time, and I've got 87,000 miles on it.
Nice.
So I literally, for the first time, had to take it to the motorcycle shop in March of this year because I had a transmission issue.
Uh-oh.
And it turned out to actually not be a transmission issue. It was just a strip nut. And so, but I couldn't shift between gears. And I can do basic motorcycle maintenance. I've done all my own tires, chains, you know, oil, brakes. I can do all that stuff. But when it starts getting into, I've done my own clutch. But when it starts getting into like internal components in the trans, I'm not real comfortable with it, and I didn't want to I didn't want to start tearing it apart and then get into something I couldn't get out of. And trying to find some good motorcycle mechanics around here is actually really difficult, especially for older bikes
yeah.
that aren't Harley Davidsons. Now, if you've got a Harley,
yeah, everyone
you need a mechanic.
On
everybody wants to work on a Harley. But I actually had to take my bike down to Beaumont to get it worked on down there and got it back. And back on the road, but literally in 86,000 miles, that's the first time I've ever had it.
Oh,
in
wow.
shop. So
that's
it's
nice.
Been, it's been so my goal is to take it to 100,000 miles, and then probably not get anything for a trade in on it.
But you could probably sell it.
But I don't know what I'll do with it yet. I mean, it's still running. I may keep it, but I'm definitely gonna. I don't want to say trade up, but I'm gonna go and I'm looking at Indians right now.
Nice. I liked the Indians when they first came out mm-hmm. again back in 2000 or you know I think it was around 2000 mm-hmm. is when I started seeing the Indians being made again, and I loved the design that had the teardrop headlight
yep.
and the saddlebags with all the fringes on it. It's like, oh man, I'd love to get one of those.
They really kind of went back retro
yeah.
on their bikes, and they're just beautiful. And, you know, I was interested because, you know, I like the bike. So I can't call myself an Indian, you know, aficionado. I don't know a whole lot of it, but I was really interested when I was looking online that they're actually owned by Polaris.
Polaris?
Yep.
That's crazy. But when I was over in Italy, that's when I got my first real motorcycle. Okay. I had motorcycles when I was younger.
Right.
But my first real street bike that I was licensed to ride and mm-hmm. all that stuff, and, you know, everything legal, was a 98 Fat Boy.
Oh.
And I fell in love with the Fat Boy.
Yep.
Back during when Terminator 2 came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's the bike. That to me was the quintessential motorcycle. When you think of an American motorcycle, that's what it was, the Fat Boy.
Yep.
The Harley Davidson Fat Boy. That was just everything about it. And it was black and chrome.
Yeah, and
it
was still so awesome. That's still one of their most popular bikes.
I love it. And I had straight pipes on that thing. Mm-hmm. The thing was so loud. It's like you could hear me coming down the street. But then I got back to America and someone stole it right out of my garage.
No way.
Yeah. And then my next bike, I didn't get another bike until 2006,
mm-hmm.
and it was a Fat Boy.
There you go.
But it was the first black denim okay. Fat Boy in Louisiana. So for like a week or so, I was the only one riding around on this exact bike. And then I started seeing them everywhere. It's weird how you do it. It's like you never see anything until you get something.
Until you get it yourself, yeah. No, you know, and I think that's something that's one of the things that I really... That kind of attracts me to the Indian bike as well is it's still not overly popular. You know, there's not just a ton of them on the roads and stuff. You know, and Harley makes a good bike. I can't argue that, but they're everywhere. You know,
the one that
thousands
I'm,
of them.
The one that I'm sad that they stopped making was the Buell.
Yep.
I got to ride one of those as a test ride. Scared the heck out of me, man. It's like because I'm used to a big old tank
mm-hmm.
riding around on a tank. This the first time I was on like a any kind of crotch rocket,
mm-hmm.
and I took off from a red light and just popped a little wheelie. It's just I didn't even try and just popped a wheelie, scared me to mm-hmm. death. Drove it around the block, pulled it back in, says thanks for the ride. I don't think I'm gonna go with it. Yep. It's like I would have killed myself on that thing.
Absolutely.
And then. When I got over here, I had the Fat Boy, and then I traded it in for a Road Glide Ultra.
Okay.
Beautiful bike. Oh, yeah. And it was fun to ride.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wanted to ride that everywhere. And my philosophy was I'm not going to get a T-shirt unless I ride my motorcycle there. I had T-shirts all from a bunch of areas.
Mm-hmm.
And people said, well, we could get you a T-shirt. No, I have to ride my bike there. I can't even stop at a place when I'm driving my truck to go get one. No, I have to ride the bike there. And then I got married and, you know, priorities changed. And it's like now I have to carry things around and take people places. And so I finally just got rid of it. And, you know, someday I'm thinking maybe again.
Yeah,
I'll get one. I do like the new ones with the shark nose mm-hmm. and the headlights and stuff. But I always rode with my helmet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are different types of helmets out there that people wear just to keep the cops from bugging them, mm-hmm. yep. but they're not safety right. helmets. I mean, I had one. It was just a little skull cap.
Yep.
Or brain bucket, because that's all that they're good for.
Yeah. No, it's at the top of your head. And I'll tell you, I've known a few people who've been involved in motorcycle accidents. And then, of course, I read about motorcycle accidents regularly, unfortunately, sadly. And I haven't read a single one yet where the rider landed on top of his head.
No. No. And road rash hurts.
It does. It does. You know, I've been fortunate. You know, I've been fortunate. I've laid my bike. I've been riding motorcycles now for a little over 30 years. I got my motorcycle license actually about a week after I got my car license. When I turned 16, I got my driver's license and then went back a week later and got my motorcycle license. I started riding dirt bikes when I was probably about 9 or 10, just in the cornfields around the house. I grew up in northwestern Illinois, you know, and we had cornfields. And so I had a little YZ80, which actually I still have. It's a 1974 YZ80, and my goal is to rebuild it and give it to my grandson or my great grand, whatever down the road, but is to get it back up and running and stuff. But that's when I started riding, and I rode on that till I was about 12 and really kind of outgrew it. And my dad had a couple motorcycles, and so I rode with him all the time. Some of my fondest memories are riding with my dad, Friday nights going up to Wilmot, Wisconsin to the dirt track to go watch racing. And then riding the motorcycle back and forth. And so I learned to have a passion for riding from a very, very early age. And as soon as I got my driver's license, then I went and I asked my dad if I could start riding the Kawasaki. It was a KZ550, I think is what it was. You know, not a big motorcycle or anything like that, but that's what I started riding on and got my permit and then got my license. And I've been riding ever since, with the exception of probably about 4 years when I got married the first time. And then ended up selling my motorcycle. You know, like you said, priorities change. I had a new wife, had a baby coming on the way and stuff like that. And so ended up selling my motorcycle. I'm like, okay, it's not. And then but then I went to Iraq, OIF-1. And I was a combat engineer. And so we were riding around in APCs and 113 track vehicles. And I was a squad leader just hanging out in the back. And of course, I'm hanging out in the back of the APC and the wind's just, you know, blowing me in the face and stuff and started making me think of motorcycles. And I'm like, I'm getting a motorcycle when I get back. So got back from OIF-1 in April of 04. And that was what I did. I went and I bought a motorcycle, and that's the motorcycle I still have today. So
that's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. I started off on a little trail bike, Yamahonda.
Okay.
It was my dad and his friend built this, mm-hmm. and it was like a Yamaha engine on a Honda frame.
Oh my goodness.
So it was a little trail bike, and that's how I learned. And the good thing about riding a motorcycle is that you actually learn how to use the clutch and, mm-hmm. and shift gears,
yep.
which makes driving a standard vehicle a lot easier.
Right.
And then from there I went to an ARX 50K, a Yamaha ARX 50K, okay. which was a street legal motorcycle, if that's what you want to call it. It was more like a 5-speed moped.
it would probably be equivalent to these electric bikes they
yeah.
have now.
Yeah,
those things go fast.
But yeah, they do. And they were all over Florida. Mm-hmm. They were all over there, man. It's like, did people just leave these out? No, they're for rent. It's like, okay. It's like, anyway, like the helmets, I just see, when I look at helmets, I'm looking at not only that should they be DOT approved or Department of mm-hmm. Transportation approved, which will mean they have the sticker on there.
Yep.
But I'm also looking to match the style of helmet with the style of bike that I'm riding.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just because, you know, it's seeing somebody riding like an FZR 1000 with an open face helmet just doesn't look right.
Right. No.
But I mean, you can, but do you want to? It just doesn't look right. Or watching, it's like riding a Harley with a full face helmet. Mm-hmm. It's just, well, how are people supposed to know it's you?
You know, a couple of years ago, my son joined the Marines, and he was out in Camp Pendleton, out at MCRD San Diego. And so I went out to see him for his graduation, his boot camp graduation. And I went out a day early and rented an Indian. So that's where I got the t-shirt from. So even further back than that, in 2018, I was at Maine for a wedding. And I went out a day early and I rented a Harley out there. And so when I got done, came back, the guy gave me a free Harley t-shirt.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was like, great, that's awesome. Thanks. So I went to San Diego and went out a day early and rented an Indian Challenger. I tell you what. So again, I've been riding around for almost 20 years on a 650. You know, it's really the only thing I've ever known. And then I go and I rent this Indian Challenger, and I want to say it was a 15 or 1600 cc bike. I don't remember. I honestly don't remember.
They need a lot of power to push around a lot of weight.
I've never rode anything with that much power. And nor have I rode anything like, now my bike's comfortable, and I've done probably more than a dozen 1,000-mile rides on my bike.
Ouch.
I love it. Although the older I get, my knee starts.
You're going to need the bikes that I like riding. It's kind of like an easy chair on wheels.
So that's exactly it. So my bike, you know, right now, like I said, I sit up straight, you know, and my legs are straight, you know, straight down below me and stuff. And so the older I get, my knee starts hurting and stuff. So I'm looking at a bike where I can kind of sit back and stretch my legs out a little bit and stuff. So I rented this Indian Challenger, and I loved how it rode. I was out on, and this is going to sound bad, I'm probably telling on myself here, but I was out on, I don't even remember what interstate it was, and I was going with the flow of traffic, you know, and I looked down and I'm doing 95.
Oops.
But I'm literally going with the flow of the traffic. I was so just enamored by riding this bike that I wasn't paying attention. I'm literally going along with the flow of traffic. But I had no idea. Had no idea that the bike was even going that fast that I was going at, you know. And it was literally, like I said, it's like riding my recliner, you know, down the interstate. It was so smooth. I've never ridden anything that just glides like that. And after riding that, I had some issues with the clutch. I wasn't a fan of the clutch. My bike's a cable clutch and this is a hydraulic clutch. And so the release is a lot different and, you know, and it takes a little bit to get used to it. So when I got back, and I turned everything in, the guy asked how the ride was, and I told him, the ride was great and stuff. And I'm like, well, just out of curiosity, do you have any like free t-shirts, you know, for renting the bike? I mean, now granted, it cost me like $180 to rent it for a day, you know, he's like free t-shirts. Yeah, I can probably find one around here somewhere. And so that's the t-shirt I got. So
nice.
It's you know, San Diego.
Somebody once asked, what's your favorite price? I said free.
Yeah, absolutely. I love free 99 all day long.
Now that's the other thing. About safety with motorcycles is you can't become complacent while riding.
No.
And that's, you know, just like your story where, I mean, you became complacent with the speed,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden it just happens so quick,
mm-hmm.
especially on a motorcycle, because everything is so quick. And when I ride, I'm always got my head on a swivel. I'm mm-hmm. always looking for some place or somebody not noticing me and all that. And when I come up to intersections, and if I have any kind of question or worries about it, my hand is over the brake.
Yes.
And ready to go, because it'll just take that much.
Yep.
And, then you have to be worried about people behind you, because you can stop a lot quicker than the vehicles mm-hmm. behind you. And you never want to get in a fight with a big rig.
Nope. No, you'll lose every time.
Every time. There's a lot to safety, especially when riding in groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to stagger them and be two abreast Now, for all the people that out there that don't ride motorcycles, a motorcycle is entitled to the entire lane. You cannot share the lane with a motorcycle. And
they try.
There are certain states where splitting lanes is not illegal or not not really illegal.
Yeah, you know, and California is one of those. And I was, you know, I was really surprised. I have never ridden in a state where lane splitting, and for, like you said, for those who don't ride motorcycles, who aren't familiar with what lane splitting is when a motorcycle will ride down the middle of two lanes. So you've got a car in the right lane and a car in the left lane, and the motorcycle's riding down the middle. You see it primarily,
right,
obviously,
in
on interstates and highways.
Now, mainly the way you want to do, or the way that is, I think in California, the rule behind that is you can't be going more than 5 or 10 miles an hour faster than the vehicles you're passing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually meant for just heavy traffic.
Right.
So you don't want to be going 100 miles an hour.
Nope.
Just splitting lanes.
And I would say I did get stuck in some really heavy traffic between Los Angeles and San Diego. And I just kept having motorcycles just passing me. I'm like, I didn't know it was legal because I never looked it up. You know, I didn't know it was legal. And I'm like, that can't be legal. Like, who would do that? And in my mind, I'm like, that's just stupid. You know, meanwhile, the cars are sitting still. And then all of a sudden I have a motor cop that passes me lane splitting. I'm like, I watch him. And then probably 5-10 minutes later, another motor cop comes. I'm like, this sitting here is really dumb. I'm going to try this. And I did it for a couple miles and got a couple miles, but I wasn't comfortable with it because I don't do it, you know, and stuff like that. I wasn't comfortable with it and stuff. And of course, the Challenger is a big bike, much bigger than what I have.
Yeah.
And stuff. So, but it was kind of interesting being able to pass everybody like that and stuff. But it is super dangerous because,
You get that one person that's not paying attention, or you get people that get mad or think that you're not allowed to do it or you shouldn't be allowed. So they'll open the door on you and or they'll cut over and block you, and it's like, and you have to stop in time, and it's like. And, you know, the sad thing is I've been on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Before I started riding street bikes a lot, I used to get jealous of them going down the lanes.
Yep.
And didn't know the laws and all that stuff. It's like, well, they were allowed, and, you know, I would try blocking them in or just make it difficult. And,
yep.
And I look back, I hate myself when I was younger. I hate my younger self. If I met him, oh no.
we'd have some talks.
But when you're in the military and you have a motorcycle, you're subject to different rules.
You are, yep.
And a lot of it is, first of all, safety, but you also have to know more rules because you're going to be driving or riding in more states and more countries.
Mm-hmm.
My first real main street bike I bought in Italy. So I was riding my bike in Italy before I was riding it in America. Mm-hmm. And once again, the rules are different over there. Like lane splitting is you can lane split over there without much trouble.
Lanes in Italy are kind of subjective.
Yeah,
anyway.
It's a suggestion. I'll ride over here. You ride over there.
Yeah.
And you come up to a red light. And if you're the first car at a red light, you won't be long because all the scooters and motorcycles will get right in front of you and then just take off. And then one problem I had was a person had put on their left turn signal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, so you're going to turn left, so I'll just go around you on the right. Nope, he pulled over to the right. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And so that scared me. It's like, all right, I'm not going to do that. But apparently some people, when they're turning left in a two-lane road, they pull over to the side of the road and wait for both lanes to clear to turn left. That way they're not blocking traffic. It's like, that's not good.
speaking of Italy, I was in Rome and rented a car, and we were driving in downtown Rome. And I tell you, because you mentioned the scooters, I felt like I was in a scene out of the Jetsons, you know, because I was driving and there was just dozens of scooters just in and out and just all around, just like the little flying cars in the Jetsons. I was in a left turn lane to turn left, and there was a car in the right turn lane to go straight, but no, the light turned and he turned left to go in front of me. It's
like
driving in Italy is definitely an experience.
Oh yeah,
it's an adventure.
I think the laws are more like suggestions. So, like, I think you should slow down at a stop sign at least.
Yeah, and turn signals.
No,
I don't even know why they put them on Italian cars.
No, I think that's just for Actually, no, I don't know what it is for. Now, the big things that I've noticed around Fort Polk is the motorcycle safety course.
Yes.
There's three of them. There's three. There's the basic motorcycle safety course, the advanced motorcycle safety course, and then the street bike or the sport bike.
Yep.
Course.
So actually, that's changed now.
Oh, it's changed.
So the military.
It has been a while since I've been to.
It used to. So the and that kind of is a great segue into the motorcycle mentorship program. So the motorcycle mentorship program has been around the Army since before I even came in. But it wasn't always known as the motorcycle mentorship program. It was the Army Motorcycle Safety Program. You know, is what it was, and that was probably in the late 80s, early 90s when they started. You know, they started that, and honestly, it was really just an identification and tracking process. Who's riding motorcycles in the Army? And there was very little focus on any kind of I don't want to say training, because even back in the 90s, you had to do the Motorcycle Safety Foundation courses. So you still had to do those. But outside of that, once you got your basic rider card or your experienced advanced rider card, then that was pretty much it. You know, you just went and you rode your motorcycle and stuff. But then over the years, the Army had identified, and I'll tell you, actually, I was looking at a thing in a report from 1991 that was from the at that time Fort Rucker, now Fort Novosel, the Army Safety Center down there, that they had a report, and they had identified that most motorcycle accidents, about 80-85% of the motorcycle accidents were the cause of rider error, driver error, losing control, excessive speed, and alcohol abuse. That was in the 90s that they identified that, right? Well, guess what the same majority of accidents are today? You know, it's 30 years later, and we're still losing an average of 22 to 24 motorcycle riders a year in the Army for the same thing, for driver error, excessive speed, loss of control, and alcohol, you know.
Now, the loss of control, I can pretty much attribute a lot of the basic loss of control accidents is from inexperience.
It is.
Because I was subject to that. Mm-hmm. I was coming up on an exit, and it turned, and I was going too fast, mm-hmm. and it freaked me out. And because I didn't take the turn, or I wasn't about to take the turn quickly or sharp enough, mm-hmm. and, you know, with the experience that I had at the time, it's just I wasn't comfortable leaning in that far, especially on a Fat Boy, which has the platforms right there. And, you know, it's you hit those the wrong way and it's you're going to go skidding out of control.
Yep.
But I almost lost it on that. Right. And it's like, OK, it's like I've got to readjust this. But yeah. I went to the basic safety course in Italy, and that helped out a lot. It really, you know, and then here at Fort Polk, I was able to get into the safety mm-hmm. courses, which is almost impossible to do when you're a civilian.
It is.
Because it is meant for active duty. Other than that, you have to go to an outside source and pay for it and stuff. But, you know.
And that's one of the great things. So getting back really quick to the courses. So it was back in the 90s, early 2000s. It was just the basic rider course and the advanced rider course, or the experienced rider course is what they called it. And these courses have gone through several name changes over the years. It's gone from BRC and ARC or ERC to BRC 1 and BRC 2, and then they added the military sport bike course. That was actually a fun fact on that. That was added in 2007. And that was actually, they started testing that course when I was going through flight school out at Fort Novosel, Fort Rucker in Alabama. So I was actually attended the very first one that they tested out there at the safety center. They said, hey, we're thinking about implementing this new military sport bike course. And we need to test it. We need people to do it. And so I was there. And so I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And I'll tell you, I thought it was a really good course. My bike was my bike being a little bit taller, a little bit heavier than an actual sport bike, it was a little more challenging because what they do there is they teach you to get down in some turns really low and really fast as you can in a parking lot. You know? But they teach you how to do that. And so that's, you know, and that's where that inexperience, a lot of people, when they encounter a situation like that, a curve where they weren't ready for, the immediate reaction is to just slam on the brake, you know, and sometimes you want to speed up.
Yeah.
But you got to speed up and you got to lay out, you know, and they're not ready for that. And that's where a lot of those accidents occur. Yep.
Yeah. The biggest one, you know, and the other safety things that you really can't be taught in a course is like riding in bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
Like the most dangerous time to ride a motorcycle is not during a heavy storm, but during a light storm as it starts,
mm-hmm.
because there's the oil on the road that's built up over time, and now it's not mixing properly and makes it really slick. But you know, it's the intricacies and just all the little things that you want to, that you don't even pay attention to.
Right.
These courses will highlight and at least bring your attention to it, so you aren't looking at it as a brand new, oh, I never thought of that. No, I've thought mm-hmm. about it once or twice, maybe. And so we have courses on post for active duty.
We do, and actually with the Department of Defense instruction that was published, I want to say it's about a year or two ago. Well, it wasn't published; it was changed about a year or two ago. Those courses are across the Department of Defense. Those courses are now actually available to spouses, dependents, and civilian contractors. Now, it's not fully implemented here at Fort Polk, working on that. But at last I heard is the GS employees are being able to take that course now.
Ooh, nice.
I'm going to get more information on that.
That would be great.
And we're going to get that out through the media and stuff like that, so that they understand that. We'll put that out through the Fort Polk email system so that they understand that's if that is in fact now available to them, then we'll get that information out.
I would love that.
You know, because it's the Army's paying for those courses. The Department of Defense is paying for those courses regardless. They're paying for so many seats every month, whether they're filled or not. And so what they've realized is that, hey, you know, we have civilian contractors that work on the installation that ride motorcycles. We've got GS employees that you know, ride on the installation. We've got family members, dependents that ride on the installation. And we're responsible for those medical costs as well. So it only benefits the government to make sure that those individuals are properly trained as well.
Yeah, they should be properly trained.
Absolutely.
Everybody should be. And it also, they'll even teach you the proper clothing and IPE or individual protective mm-hmm. equipment, which is required to ride on installations. Each installation is slightly different, but for the most part, the military has minimum that you have to be wearing
yep.
before you can ride on the installation. Of course, everything that you have to ride with off post is going to be brought on post also, mm-hmm. but then the military can push even more. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, and I don't know about, well, no, I do know here. You have to be wearing long sleeve and gloves mm-hmm. and eye protection and long pants, you have to be wearing pants with that cover your ankles or mm-hmm. your boots. And it's, you know, I see people riding around with short sleeves, which, you know, is proper for me around here. It's hot.
Yeah, it's
hot.
It's 95, 100 degrees out. Why would I want to wear long sleeves?
Exactly.
But like you said earlier, you know, it's the road rash is real and it hurts and stuff. So, you know, and that's, again, that's another facet of the motorcycle mentorship program. So all units are required to have a unit motorcycle mentor, which is obviously preferred to be the most senior motorcycle rider in the unit. Not all units even have a motorcycle rider. So it's that next higher headquarters that's responsible for fulfilling that position. But that mentor's job is to really take responsibility and take ownership of the junior riders in the unit and teach them, train them, mentor them, guide them, and make sure they understand the policies and the regulations for riding, make sure they understand how to ride, the instruction that they need. And the PPE is a big one. And when we look at the preliminary loss reports off the safety center, a lot of times we're seeing that soldiers aren't wearing the proper PPE, you know, and it doesn't, a lot of times it doesn't say what the soldier was or wasn't wearing, you know, sometimes we can probably make an assumption that it was a helmet, you know, cause that's unfortunately usually one of the big ones that a lot of younger soldiers like to shed.
I don't even get that because in Louisiana, it's the law. You have to be wearing a helmet.
It is.
Whereas in Texas, it's optional. I think Florida's optional also, but
yeah, more and more states now, you know, but when you and I were riding back in the 80s and the 90s, you know, there weren't any helmet laws.
No.
Most states didn't have a helmet law. More and more states now over the years are coming up with helmet laws.
Oh, and when I was growing up, we didn't even have seatbelt laws.
Yeah, well, that's true too. Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna be taking a nap on the back shelf of the underneath
oh,
the window.
Yes. Yep. I remember that myself.
My seatbelt growing up was my mom's arm going across my chest.
Oh my goodness, the good old days, right?
Yeah.
No, but you know, we have seen a reduction. We have seen a reduction in motorcycle fatalities in the Army from the 90s to the early 2000s and to now. You know, in the early 90s, we were seeing in the upwards of 30 to 35, you know, motorcycle fatalities annually in the Army, and we've reduced that down to, you know, the low 20s. You know, and that's still a lot. You know, and I wish we could say that one motorcycle fatality is one too many, but the reality is there is an inherent risk to riding. And we understand and we know that we're going to lose people. And so the goal of the motorcycle mentorship program isn't to try and reduce those fatalities to zero, because that's just not reality. But if we can reduce those fatalities by one, or if we can reduce those fatalities by two this year, then that's a win. You know, that really is. That's a win. And if we can reduce those fatalities through this training program, then I think that's a success for the program. You know, unfortunately, there's just some things that the motorcycle mentorship program and motorcycle mentors can't do. And that's, we can't be out there every single day with every single rider watching them, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, for, I call them green suiters, you know, for Army, for soldiers. And honestly, the motorcycle mentorship program and the PPE, that's actually Department of Defense. It's not branch specific. It's not specific to the Army. It's all branches, all services are required to attend the MSF training, and they're required to have the PPE. And it's required on duty, off duty. It doesn't matter if you're in a leave status. If you're a soldier, if you're a green suiter, and you ride a motorcycle, this applies to you whether you're on duty or off duty. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
You know, on post or off post. It applies 24/7 anytime you're on two wheels.
Yep, like you said, all branches and even the Guard,
mm-hmm. yep.
National Guard. I had to
all compost.
I had to take all of those courses and get them renewed every so often too.
Yep.
I remember when the course was a one time thing, and then they started switching. No, you have to do it every 2 years, and it's crazy out there, you know.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, and so that's something that has also kind of changed over the years is the frequency of the training. So right now, and it's you have to have the BRC1 before you can even get on two wheels. So if you're a soldier and you're looking at, you want to get a motorcycle.
And that's kind of a catch-22. How do you get the BRC1 if you're not allowed to be on a motorcycle yet?
So how do you? So that's the great thing about BRC1 is they have motorcycles there. They have little 250s and a couple different makes and models. But they provide the motorcycle for the training, so you don't have to get a motorcycle and ride it to the training. You can actually take that training before you get a motorcycle, and you're supposed to take that training before you get a motorcycle.
Before
that is
you get the motorcycle.
That is the key word. Before
that is, they should say, okay, you're going out to buy a motorcycle? It's like, okay, are you military? Yeah. Do you have your BRC1? No. go get it. And then we can sell you the motorcycle. Yeah. That would be cool.
Yeah.
I mean, well, for the people trying to get a bike.
No. You know, but yeah, no. So they've got all you have to do is you just bring your own PPE. You know, you come there with your own PPE. And like you said, so PPE is a helmet. It has to be DOT, Department of Transportation, or Snell approved. And like you said, there's a sticker on the back of it. You know, and another thing, you know, so, you know, you can focus on just getting a helmet that's approved by DOT or Snell, but you really need to get a helmet and you need to make sure that it fits properly. Because a helmet that doesn't fit properly, it's not going to do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, the true story. I had a helmet and I think it fit properly. I just don't think I had it strapped down hard enough. And the wind caught it and started pulling it back.
Oh, yeah.
Which started pulling the strap. Mm-hmm. It started choking me. It's like, okay, I got to pull over for a second here.
Yeah, but, no, a good fitting helmet should be actually pretty snug around the face.
Yeah.
And I would almost hesitate to say, you know, almost uncomfortably tight, you know. Uncomfortable, a little bit of a stretch, but yeah, it should be pretty tight around.
You should know it's there.
You should absolutely. Yep. And then, like you said, you know, and again, I'm a fan of the full face helmet. When I rented my Challenger, I went ahead and I rented a little turtle shell, you know, helmet because yeah, I mean, I want everybody to see me riding this cool bike.
That's why Harleys go slower than the street bike or the sports bikes, because when you're on a sports bike, you wear the full face helmet because no one's going to see you. It's just going to be a blur as you go by. Right. But on a Harley, you want to go slow and loud, and that way everyone looks and sees you.
Yeah, there's when it comes to helmets, I mean, there's a helmet for every bike, every person. They've got all kinds of. My favorite's the modular. I like being able to lift the front of my helmet up, especially in Louisiana. When it's, you know, 95 degrees and I come up to a stoplight and the heat's just radiating off the road, I like to be able to just pop the front of my helmet up and just get some air and stuff. So my favorite's a modular, but they do have all kinds of shapes and sizes of helmets. Just, you got to make sure it fits. Make sure it's, you know, like I said, nobody that I have ever known in an accident has ever landed on the top of their head. So it's great if you have one of those cool little turtle shells, but is that really going to protect you in an accident?
No, not it'll really. Get you on the chin.
Yeah.
No, thanks.
Yep. You know, so, you know, and, you know, another reason why I like full face is I can't tell you how many times I've been riding down the road and I've gotten pelted straight in the visor by a rock or a big bug or something coming off of a vehicle in front of me. And I have a full face on, but I can't help but think of how much that would have hurt. If I didn't have a full face on.
Take my word for it. It does. It does. And also love bugs and June bugs.
Yeah.
Plentiful around here. Plentiful.
Around here especially.
Well, Chief, I appreciate you coming in. And we've got classes. Get with you. If you ride a motorcycle, get with your mentor, your unit mentor. If not, get a hold of Chief Murphy over at the aviation. He'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. You can come down to the airfield or you can find me on Global. Real easy, but yeah, get with your mentor, find out if you're interested in riding a bike or if you're just getting here and you have a motorcycle already, but you know you haven't taken the training. You've got to have the BRC before you can even get on two wheels. And then within 12 months of completing BRC, you have to have the ARC. So we've gone back to the advanced riders course now. It's the same course it's always been, but now it's gone back to the ARC.
And the good thing about it for the military at the moment is that those are free courses. So you don't have to worry about paying for it or anything. Just be safe. And hopefully if you do have a motorcycle, you'll be able to participate in the safety ride that happens every so often. Once it's supposed to be once a year, but you know, recently it's few and far between.
Yeah. So we do one every May. We do one for Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month. Last year it was done the last weekend of May, and we found out that was just a terrible time to do it.
A little warm.
Because, well, not warm. It's Memorial Day weekend.
So
lots of people are going out of town. Lots of units are already doing things. Fort Polk had lots of things going on last year, so we still had great turnout last year. We had 40 bikes, and I was really happy with that. This year, we moved it to the beginning of the month and to kick off Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month with the motorcycle, the Garrison ride. And we had 51 bikes this year.
Sounds
so
good.
I was kind of hoping for more, but we had to change it at the last minute. We were going to do it on Friday, but then Friday had a 30 to 40% chance of thunderstorms.
Yeah.
And so, of course, in Louisiana, you might or you might not get them. But Thursday was clear. And so at the 11th hour, we changed it. We moved the ride to Thursday. We still had 51 bikes, but I think if we hadn't changed it and the weather would have been good, we probably would have had more on Friday. But you can count on every May for Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month. There will be a Fort Polk, or well, soon to be Fort Johnson,
yep,
Garrison motorcycle ride and rally. And we'll keep building that and getting more and more. You know, we get food trucks out there. We get some sponsors that donate T-shirts and other things that we give out. It's really a good time. And all right. We'll be getting that again.
And next year we'll have you in a little earlier. That way we can talk about it.
Yes, sir.
But until then, I appreciate you coming in, Chief Murphy from or CW4 Murphy from the aviation unit out there on the airfield. Thanks for coming in. Yes, I appreciate it. And I'm Jeff England with the Fort Polk Public Affairs Office, and we'll be listening at you later.